Okay. Good evening, guys. My name is Dr. Harrell. I am your instructor for the FTT 122 class. I will tell you that in the past, I've come into these things with an agenda, and it's always gone off the rails and not stayed in line with the agenda. I have started really kind of leaving it more of as an open forum. Since we are in week one with both of you guys, there are a couple of things that I would like to show you inside the system and show the resources that I've provided to you. I'm going to open it up for you guys to ask questions. Outside of that, do either of you have any particular thing that you'd like to make sure we touch on?
Not this time.
Okay. All right. Well, let me go ahead, Daniel. I'm sorry.
Sorry, I'm still trying to figure out this from my phone. I don't have any specific questions, but I'm sure if I come up with anything as we go, I will ask. I'm using my phone and I do not know how to do the chat other than the notes feature. So I don't know if there's another way to figure this out, but I will figure it out before we're done.
And if nothing else, you can always just pop in and ask the question. I can't always see the video of everybody just because of how I'm sharing my screen. But all that's to say is that it is we'll make it work. How about that?
Perfect.
Okay, so let me. So Samuel, I know that you posted in the class, but share a little bit about yourself.
I Samuel Liss from Indiana, currently in North Carolina here at Fort Bragg. Been in for about 3 years. A couple different PPU sticks. And just trying to have a potential cr starting out as a side hustle, and potentially if it ramps up, have a career after the Army. I'm only 3 years in, so I still have 17 more years to get it all figured out. So decided to take advantage of the resources the Army has and go to college.
Okay. What's your MOS?
25U, combo.
All right. What? Communications?
Yeah, signal support specialist, but combo.
Oh, all right. Yeah.
Yep.
So, 11 Bravo, 11 Charlie, 11 Mike,
Okay.
and 37 Fox.
Intel, geospatial.
37 Fox is psychological operations.
Okay.
So.
Cool.
All right. Daniel, can you, I know you're at work, but can you share a little bit about yourself while we're here together?
Yes, I can. Been in the automotive industry for probably a little more than 25 years now. Obviously did some car dealership stuff, and now I am working for an airline here in Phoenix, Arizona, which is kind of the job that I thought I wanted until I started doing it. Do love what I do, but tired of being somebody else's boss or somebody else's employee. Kind of want to do my own thing eventually. So when it comes down to the gun stuff, there's a couple different routes I'd like to go. One of them being some sort of research and development, which I don't know how much it would take me to get into that without having to do any kind of engineering stuff. And then also my own gunsmithing shop and possible store as well. So that's coming up in the future. But as of right now, I don't have any plans yet. I just kind of want to finish this schooling and see what other schooling I need, learn some more stuff, and then go from there.
Awesome. You guys saw in my bio, my background, law enforcement, military, private sector as a trainer, public education as a middle school teacher. Man, I have been shooting since I was 6. I have been reloading since I was 10. I'll tell you, guns and everything gun related is kind of my therapy. Reloading at the end of the day is one of the ways that I have found to decompress from dealing with middle school students all day. As a part of that, once you kind of start into the reloading world, the rabbit warren gets deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. I am a wildcatter, so I design cartridges and then I build the guns to test the cartridge to see if it does what I want to do. Not that I've actually sold any of them or done anything with it other than that, just for giggles to do it, but it's kind of cool creating your own cartridge. The one that I have taken all the way through from start to finish is in essence a 357 Sig Magnum. Almost pure 357 Magnum performance out of a semi-automatic platform, but not quite. The next version hopefully will. That's kind of the next thing that I'm working on. I also tend to tinker around. I'm in the process of working with Lost Wax Casting with the intent to build an AKAR in brass with a brass upper and lower receiver, a laminate wood stock in 7.62 by 39. I just kind of tinker and it keeps me out of trouble most days. Most days, not every day, but most days. That being said, guys, do either of y'all currently reload?
No, it's something I've thought about. I just don't have, from the research I've done, unless it's anything larger than a 5.56, 7.62, that it's kind of hard to justify the cost of doing it unless you're really into it, which I don't know. Maybe this class will change my mind, but it may just be cheaper just to get bulk from either a surplus or someplace where it's cheaper. But once you start getting into a 300 blackout, 308, or anything larger than that, especially if you already had the equipment, then it might become more viable option. I could be wrong, but just from what I've seen, and then some of the taxes that just came out, I think a week ago, they're raising taxes on free powder or free floating powder to do the reload. So it's kind of, unless I can really justify it, and until I have a weapon that does that, I
No, I
can't.
hear you. I hear you. Daniel, what about you?
I currently do not reload. I've been having a lot of discussions with one of my close coworkers about it, and in the process of buying the stuff to do it, but I don't have a place to do the reloading at my house currently. So I'll have everything ready to go when I purchase a larger house and have my own space, so that the wife won't yell at me for trying to do that kind of stuff inside the house. But I
Well,
am in the works for it.
awesome. So if we think about just firearm control, and obviously this is not a class on politics or on public opinion, but in order to regulate firearms, they don't have to pass a bunch of laws. They just have to take away our ability to get ammo. That you could pass all the limited magazine capacity laws you want. But if I can't get bullets, it doesn't go bang. So,
Right.
one of the advantages of reloading, especially if you are purchasing your powder, purchasing your primers, building up that stockpile, just like you would, your ammunition. So you talked about buying bulk, Samuel. So if you're going to buy bulk 9mm, well, 1,000 rounds of 9mm is going to cost you X number of dollars. Well, 1,000 primers are going to cost you about $60. So, if I'm spending $120 on 1,000 9mm, why don't I spend? I'm just throwing things out, right? But if I'm going to spend that, why not invest that same thing into the components, and then I've got it later on. Now, here's the real beauty of all this. I promise you, no matter what level shooter you are, if you are remanufacturing your own ammunition and you are doing it correctly, and you are in control of all your component parts, you will make a better cartridge, a better shooting, more accurate cartridge than anything you can purchase off the shelf made by any manufacturer today.
And you would say even anything smaller in a 9mm 5.56 is still justifiable?
Like a 380? Sure.
Correct.
I mean,
Okay.
so let's talk about difficulty of finding 380 ammunition, right? So 9x18 is not the same thing as 380.
Sure.
The 9x18 is a different, it's a Makarov cartridge. It's not actually a 380. It's the 9mm Kurtz.
Well,
So
I meant, sorry, I meant larger, not smaller. Anything larger, if you're not doing anything larger than that, the what kind of scale would you have to do to be able to justify that?
How much does a box of 7.62 by 51 cost currently?
That I don't know. I know 5.56, but
Here,
yeah.
let's play around. I am going to share my screen. Let's just go to Midway USA. All right. So in this case, we're looking at $27.99 up to $679, dependent upon obviously what quantity we're looking at and the component pieces of it, right? So here's one. So this M80, this is close to what you would look at or you would consider your normal 308 training round. So in this case, best price 90 cents per round. Hey, look, you saved 50 bucks. Woohoo! So our options are 500 or 50. So if we look at 50, you're looking at $45.99 a box, right? Now, understand the most expensive component is going to be your brass case, right? So if we go and we look at brass, and actually, let me grab something to write on.
So I do have a question. Are you're remain when you're reloading, I'm assuming you're reusing your brass?
Oh, heck yeah.
Okay. So
Yeah.
this,
And,
so what you're saying is the most expensive part is what we're already saving on?
right. Yeah, the
Okay.
most expensive part is the brass itself. But
Okay.
let's say you're starting from scratch, right? So
Okay.
you start from scratch, you're gonna buy 100 cases, you're gonna buy your primers, you're gonna buy your powder, all you're gonna buy your projectiles, all that kind of stuff. Well, on a standard brass case, normally you can expect to get anywhere between 10, anywhere up to 10 loads and potentially more than that out of that single case, right?
Okay.
Now, if you're using nickel cases, meaning nickel plated brass,
Okay.
you're looking at nominally 20 loads per case,
Okay.
right?
Is
So
that similar to steel case as well?
You cannot reload steel case.
Okay.
And you can't reload steel. You can't reload aluminum.
Okay.
And you don't want to shoot steel because it's horrible on your chamber
Okay. Yeah,
and
that's what I had heard,
some
but
other
I was
problems.
wondering if that was a justification.
Yeah, but no, I'm sorry. I'm looking for a pin. But yeah, so I mean, you can reload it. I mean, you can't reload steel, but you can get multiple loads out of your brass case.
Okay.
Okay. So let's see, 45.99 for 50. Now, if we're looking at just straight up brass, So here's Starline Brass, 308. We can go with nickel, not available. Okay, fine. Doesn't really matter. We'll do brass and then large rifle. Quantity 50 pieces for $28. Let's do our math easy. We're just going to make it 29. Okay, so 29. And then primers. Let's see. Except lucky for me, I'm sitting on them. One of the things you guys are going to learn about, and so you see here, you have this Federal Large Rifle Primer, number
Correct.
210.
Correct.
And then you see the CCI Large Rifle Primer, number 200.
Correct.
There is no correlation between that 200 and that 210.
Okay. Is
Okay.
that just going to be paying for the name, or
Well,
what would be?
no, it's not necessarily paying for the name. It's that it's how Federal numbers their large rifle primer. It's how
Okay.
CCI numbers their large rifle primer. Like
Okay.
Remington, this number 9.5. Why
Okay.
it's 9.5, I don't know, but same tomato, tomato, potato, potato. I mean, it's
Okay.
when you're looking at loads, a large rifle primer is a large rifle primer is a large rifle primer. A
Okay.
small rifle primer is a small rifle primer is a small rifle primer. You don't necessarily worry about the primer manufacturer so long as you have the right size.
Okay.
Okay. Now, what is important, and if we look at this Remington number 9.5, okay, so there's 1,000 primers in this box for $109. Okay. Or 10 boxes of 100, so roughly $10.99 each, right? As it says here, 11 cents per piece. So, if you get, if you bought one sleeve, that'd be $10.99. So we'll go ahead and just round that up to 11 for ease. And then we'll look at projectiles. All right, so in this case, 500 of these cost 187. 100 costs $39. Now, obviously, we're looking at this and we're seeing that the numbers keep climbing, right? Except that
Correct.
next time, I don't have to pay for my brass. Right? And
Correct.
every time after that, I don't have to pay for my brass. So you see an exponential increase in your savings. Now, I get asked all the time, how long can brass actually last? Here's the reality. I don't know. I am loading 38 special brass that my dad loaded in the 80s. Yes, you heard me right. I am loading 38 special brass today that my dad loaded in the mid to late 80s. So, how long does your brass last? I don't know. Right? So, if you think about that from that perspective, we're talking about negative cost. I am well into the negatives in regards to my brass expenditure, right? The other thing is I happen to be a brass hound. I pick up every scrap of brass at the range that I can, even if it's a caliber I don't shoot. If it's a caliber I don't shoot, I'll sell it to somebody who does shoot it and reloads it, or I'll trade it with somebody who shoots it that has something that I want, or I'll put it in my 5 gallon bucket and then I'll melt it down and turn it into brass ingots for turning brass slides and whatever else that happens to strike my fancy.
Yeah. I don't know if I'll be getting a kiln anytime soon for all that, but
Now, so we're looking at, we haven't gotten into powder. Now, a
sure.
pound of powder is 7,000 grains. Okay. So when you're looking at your powder load, what you're looking at is you're looking at a balance here. You're balancing the amount of grains you're using versus the number of cartridges you want to get out of that pound of powder, right? So for instance, pull up my calculator. I know you guys can't see my calculator, but if we say there's 7,000 grains in a pound of powder, the load that I use for my 4570 is 53 grains of argon. So out of a pound of powder, I can get 132 loads. So if a pound of powder costs me $20, right? So I'm going to divide 20 by 132. That's 15 cents per cartridge powder cost at 53 grains.
For 308.
No. This is for 4570.
Okay.
570 at 53 grains
Okay.
powder. Now, if I'm loading 38 special, I'm using 3 grains of powder. So again, 7,000 divided by 3 means out of a single pound of powder, I'm getting 2,333 cartridges.
You said 3 grains of powder in a
Yes.
38 special?
Yes, because here's the deal. Grain weight of your projectile is separate from grain weight of the powder charge that goes into it. So when you're looking at a
Okay.
box of 9mm and it says 115, that is the weight of the projectile. The projectile is 115 grains.
Okay.
It says 124 grain, the projectile is 124, 147, 147, right? But the
Okay.
amount of powder that actually goes into that case is infinitely less than that.
Okay. So
So
is there a set amount? So there is a set amount of weight, and you just subtract the weight of the bullet from how much there is total? No.
No. They're two separate numbers.
Okay.
They're two separate numbers completely, right?
Okay.
The bullet weight is going to determine how much powder we're going to use
To
based on
push
what
it.
we want it to do. The grain
Okay.
weight of the powder is based on the recipe. I mean, guys, this is cooking for dudes.
Yeah.
Right, because if I use all the right components, my sugar cookie turns out awesome. If I use all the wrong components, my sugar cookie doesn't turn out so good.
Correct.
Now, so in this case, we're looking at 2,333 for that 38 special. Well, again, if it costs me $20, that pound of powder cost me 0.008 cents per cartridge. So depending upon what you're doing and how you're doing it, you can find yourself with substantial savings across the board. And the other side is you always have ammunition to be able to load or to be able to shoot, as opposed to your buddy who doesn't reload, doesn't pick up brass, doesn't learn bullet casting, so they're actually casting their own projectiles. Doesn't do all this stuff. Well, now they put a kibosh on ammunition and you have to show your driver's license and the blood type of your firstborn child. Now they can't shoot, but you can, right? So, just on the preparation side of it, it's really cool.
Right. Huh.
To give you a simple cost analysis, because I'd like for us to look at some other stuff, but to give you a simple
Okay.
cost analysis, I shoot 45 Colt, right?
Okay.
45 Colt costs me anywhere between $45 and $72 a box of 50. I can reload that same box of 50 for $5.85.
But Yikes.
So at the low end, I'm saving $40 a box at the low end. At the upper end, I'm saving over $60 a box. At that amount of money, it doesn't take me very much time to have the investment for the equipment, right? I mean, the equipment pays for itself in a hurry. So,
But I'm taking this club.
now, one of the things that we will do, guys, is, and we may set it up on a weekend, is we'll actually, if you guys want, I'll actually take you through a metallic mount, basically a metallic cartridge reloading class, where we'll look at the setup of the dies, we'll look at the load recipe, we'll look at all of that kind of stuff, and then we'll actually produce cartridges
Okay. Do
as
we
well.
take a reloading class during our SDI course?
Not at this time. I have
Okay.
submitted the outline for one. I'm just waiting for there to be enough interest that they say that they want to do it. So, I mean, I would love to teach it. Because if you're gonna do reloading, part of that also has to be bullet casting, because if we're gonna make our own, let's make our own, right?
Right.
And then you throw shot shell in there. So the class would actually be a three-part class. It'd be metallic cartridge, shot shell, and bullet casting. But then you start getting into fire forming your cases, and making sure that you're only resizing the neck, and then you can set the bullet depth so that it automatically engages the rifling as the bolt closes. So now you have no jump between the throat into the rifling that can cause some variation in the actual engagement of the twist to get the right accuracy. Plus, you're paying attention to the twist rate based on the bullet weight. So now you're actually matching your bullet weight, your twist rate, your powder charge, your powder burn rate to a fire formed case that removes all other miscellaneous movement in the actual cartridge itself. And now you have a cartridge that's a 1,000-yard shot.
Yeah, okay. I think you lost this somewhere way back there.
That's okay. That's okay. Like I said, man, I mean, I'm a propeller-headed geek, and this stuff is. What you got, Daniel?
Just a quick question. I don't know if you covered it while I was away, but is there a recommendation you have for somebody purchasing a new reloader? A couple of guys at work told me to start with a single stage, do everything step by step. And then also I guess they sell the progressive one, which does multiple steps back to back in a, like an assembly line kind of method. What would your re recommendation for somebody that's jumping into reloading? Where would you recommend to start?
All right, so there's a couple of different considerations, and here's what I will tell you: you will always end up using a single stage press. So you could spend $2,000 and buy a Dillon press, and you're going to end up at some point spending $100 to buy a single stage, because it's easier to work a load up, meaning I have minimum powder charge, I have maximum powder charge, right? Anywhere between minimum and maximum is 100% safe. 100% safe. So, what I'm doing when I work up a load is I'm trying to figure out, okay, so let's say my range is 4 grains to 6 grains, right? Well, what I want to know is for this particular gun with this particular cartridge with this particular bullet weight, based on the way I want it to feel when it shoots, the accuracy I want to get, the other performance variables I have, which might be recoil energy, could be terminal energy, could be your penetration based on your sectional density, and there's any number of other variables, right? But I want to make sure that I have that load that's working exactly the way I want it to. Now, Samuel, you might not like the load that I developed for me, right? You might that might it might not work for you at all. But that's because it's personally based on us. Okay. So working up a load, it's easier to do that with a single stage because, in this case, our range was 4 to 6. I'm going to load 10 at 4.0. I'm going to load 10 at 4.1. And I'm going to do that all the way until I get to 6.0, at which point I'm now going to load 10 at 6, 6.0. Now I'm going to go to the range with my chronograph or whatever other measuring tool I have, and I'm going to shoot all 10 at 4.0, and I'm going to make notes. This is what I like. This is what I didn't like. This is how it felt. If your chronograph, maybe you can see spikes in the energy from the how it recorded the data. Maybe you're like me and you have a ballistics lab, and so you plug it in with a strain gauge, and now you're looking at the chamber pressures, whatever happens to be, right? But you're evaluating those 10 rounds. Let's say that you find that 5.1 is almost there, but 5.2 isn't, right? So now you're going to do 5.11, 5.12, 5.13, and continue to work that load up. But it's better to do that on a single stage than on a progressive press. All right. Most of the time, what I like to do is I like to recommend that people really look at kind of a something that's a perfect marriage between single stage and progressive. And so for that, I really like the lead products because they're more affordable. Okay. So if you look at this turret press kit here, you guys see my screen okay?
Yes. Yes, I can.
Okay. So the beauty of this is that you're only working on one case at a time. So if I mess up one case, I'm not having to completely cycle through an entire shell holder of 5 to 7 cartridges to get back to the beginning to then start over fresh, right? I just take that one out, put a new one in, and start over. So that you pull the handle 4 times, you get a new cartridge. So it automatically indexes your dies, but I'm only working on one case at a time. So it's a perfect marriage of single stage and higher production capacity. So this, what it says here is 250 in an hour. Once you get comfortable with it and you're used to how the press is going to go, you become familiar with the cartridges that you're loading. I can push that 250 to about 600 an hour. If it's one of the cartridges that I've loaded a lot, like my wife's 38 special, I can load 600 of those in an hour. And Daniel, if you're going to talk about investment. You're looking at 380. So you would want one of these two kits, and it comes with your powder scale. Oh, by the way, you already have one. Your load data, your powder feed, case prep tools, primer feeds, the actual press itself. And the only difference between these is this one has a roller handle and this one doesn't. I will tell you the roller handle is more comfortable. Now, Daniel, whether you go with a Lee press or not, I would encourage you to look at the Lee dies because your loading dies come in a couple of different configurations. You have a 3-die set here, and you have your rifle dies. Now, most other manufacturers for your rifle dies is going to be a 2-die set because one resizes, decaps, and opens up the mouth to receive the next projectile, and the other one seats the bullet and crimps. So it doesn't come with a separate crimping die. It doesn't come with a shell holder. It doesn't come with a neck resizing die only. It doesn't come with just the full size resizing die. So all of those are pieces that you would have to buy separate from a different manufacturer. So give me a rifle caliber, Samuel.
5.56.
Do. All right, so in this case, $74, right? And it's going to come with the ultimate four die set. So the ultimate four die set has your full length resized decapping die. It has a neck resized decapping die only, and then you've got a crimp and a bullet seater, right? That's $74. If come over here. Go to, well, I'll just come back to Midway. So, depending upon which die set you go, now you can buy it from them for a little bit less. Fine, go for it, right? But the Reading Premium 3-die set doesn't include four dies. Three die sets, $157. Now it does include this micrometer bullet seater. You've got here's a Hornady two die set for $114. So there's cost savings to be had in your die sets, right? Here's a four die set from Lyman that's anywhere between $249 and $309. You don't need that. You might want the micrometer bullet seater, but that you can buy independently. And what's really cool is that all the dies are threaded the same in all the standard calibers. So when you look at anything bigger than, a 308, like the 338 Lapua, 408 Chi-Tac, the 50 BMG, all of those are going to use a different die size, but everything else is threaded the same and is matchy matchy. So you can use Redding on Hornady on Lyman, Sarco on Lee, it doesn't matter. They're all the same in regards to die sets. The only one that really does matter is Dillon. And that's because the Dillon Progressive machine is a production level machine. So you're talking about 1200 to 1800 rounds in an hour. So all right. Okay, so as always, guys, and one of the things I love is we end up going down a rabbit hole. So let me go ahead. I'm going to go to the class. That way you guys can see what we're looking at. So this is the student view of your course. So this additional resources. Have either you taken a look at this yet?
No, I've been pretty busy up until a couple hours ago all week, so.
Oh, yeah, I checked it out. If that's the Google Drive, I looked at a couple files, but I didn't go too far with it.
Okay. And Daniel, did that answer your question on the press?
Yes, it did. I didn't know about that Lee brand. I kind of been talking to the coworker about it here at work about the Dillon stuff because Dillon is obviously made here in Arizona. So we have the manufacturing and the storefront and all that stuff all right here. Pretty close to where I live, pretty close to where I shoot because I go to one of the indoor gun ranges. It's right next to it, so I've only been kind of leading down that the Dillon road because of what I've been talking to about. Of course, everybody has their preference. I definitely like the price difference and the function of that Lee one you were talking about, at least to start. But definitely gave me some better information.
So here's what I will tell you is this is the same argument as Ford versus Chevy, Mac versus PC, Frigidaire versus Kenmore, Whirlpool versus Sears, right? Ryobi versus Cobalt. I mean, everyone's going to have their own preference. I am not brand pure, right? So, complete transparency. I've got I have four Lee single stage presses. Three of them are not a heavy duty press. Meaning I'm going to load everything up to and probably not exceeding 30-06 on those presses. Could I go a little bit more? Probably, but I'm not going to because I have other presses to do that with. Right? So that's three. Then I've got a Lee classic cast iron press, and that one I use to actually reload 12 gauge brass. I have a Hornady single stage press. I've got a Hornady AP lock and load ammunition plant. I've got the Lee turret four hole press. I've got a Dillon 650, a Dillon 550, a Dillon square deal. I've got a Hornady shot shell press. I have a Pawness and Warren shot shell progressive. I've got a Mech 12 gauge progressive. I've got two 12 gauge manually indexed progressives. I've got a 410 press. And then I have two other presses that are currently set up just for bullet resizing only. So, tomato, tomato. I mean, do I like the Dillons? You betcha. If I want to just sit down and load 50, I am not going to the Dillon to load 50 because it's going to take me longer to verify the setup than it will be for me to throw my dies in on the Lee turret and just pull my handle four times. Does that make sense, Daniel?
Yes, sir. You made a lot of sense. And
Well, and
your reloading setup sounds like my grills and smokers. So when I record this or watch the recording, I'm going to show this to my wife so that way she can't say I have too many grills and smokers. So when I get into the reloading, she cannot say I have too many reloading devices.
right? Well, you know the average number of guns per household in the state of Texas is 15. So if you're below average, now you know what you need to, reach for. The other saying in Texas is that if you know how many you have, you don't have enough yet.
Correct.
But what I'd say, Daniel, is that before, if you haven't already pulled the trigger, haha, on purchasing a press, maybe wait until after we do kind of that reloading bit. That way, I can talk you through and let you see how the different presses work. And then you can kind of go from there on what you think is going to be your best bang for your buck.
That sounds good to me. I was still in the research stage anyways, but I definitely will look at that Lee website a little bit and see what we're working with. And like I said, once you show me what you got to show me, then I will make my decisions.
Now here I'm gonna throw a little cherry out there. If you happen to become an NRA metallic and shot shell reloading instructor, and you happen to provide said certificate to Lee, they will sell you a press kit to include one set of dies at 50% off. So,
Pretty sweet deal.
just saying. So, all right. So let me pull up this so you guys can see what we're looking at here. So for you all, anytime that I record the video session, I will actually drop it into this weekly video sessions folder. So if you wanted to go back and see some of the other video sessions, they're all in here. At least the ones that I try and record most of them. There have been some that it's gotten the video's gotten messed up on or whatever, and so I've had to dump it out. But anyway, so it is there. And then typically in the discussion, what I do is I put a link to the video that's on the drive so that you can have access to it. Weekly lectures, video response to student questions, student examples, and then the rest of this is all just different information. So shot shell reloading, reloading data, reloading general metallic cartridge, bullet casting, black powder cartridge loading. If you guys decide that you want to get into black powder cartridge reloading, don't do it without me talking you through it first. Because there's some nuances to it that are important. Here's the U.S. Army ballistics information.
Is
There's a
that from MTC?
it is from, where did I pull that? The Reimer Digital Library.
Yeah, they recently did a PMI where they pulled almost every slide from MTC, and we had to sit through it. It took an entire like 4 hours just to go through every single slide from MTC on a PMI. And it was death by PowerPoint at its finest. Like there were a couple good things. I recognize some of the terms in our textbook, but it was just, whew, that guy knew how to drag it out. But I was wondering if that was somewhere.
Yeah, no, I try and pull stuff from the digital library whenever I can. Now, one of the things that, of course, this is a ballistics class, and we're going to talk about the different types of ballistics. So, can either of you tell me the four types of ballistics?
I would say I'm going to hazard a guess that it's something about internal blast, external and terminal, or something like that.
Okay, so what you have is you have your internal, then you have transitional, then you have external, and then you have terminal, right? So those are the four. This is my personal philosophy in regards to transitional versus external. So what are we looking at here? Okay, so our chamber and everything associated with our chamber and how the cartridge meets and interfaces with that is, at least in my philosophy, my personal philosophy, internal. Right? Now, if the reason I have it, transitional typically is right here, and it's the transition from barrel to air, which would be your external. Right. Challenge is that there's too many things that are happening from here to here for it not to be taken into consideration. Does that follow suit?
Yeah, I was a little bit confused as to the difference between internal and transitional, but I guess when you break it, I'm like that's or no, the
And this
what
is like,
not internal and transitional. The textbook had blast as the second step and then external, so I guess that was where I was confused.
and again, this is my philosophy on them, and that's because, when I think about the transition, right? That transition is from chamber because my projectile has left my cartridge case. Okay. It is no longer in the cartridge case, and that internal piece of it is the swell of the cartridge. It's that internal pressure. All of that is playing its part. Now, I'm not saying that is not internal pressure and doesn't have its piece as it's traveling down the barrel, but that transitional phase, we're looking at projectile weight, projectile composition, ballistics coefficient. speed, the rifling, twist rate, is there any damage in the inside of the barrel? So we're going to have a bleed off of gas as it goes through your gas tube. So where how is that actually playing into it, and how much impact does that have on it? And then we get all the way to the end, and we haven't even talked about barrel harmonics yet, right? We get all the way to the end of this, and now we're looking at, okay, so how is this projectile leaving the muzzle and then entering into our atmosphere, which would be that external step, right? And so you have everything from where the projectile leaves the case mouth to where it exits the crown of the barrel, and all of that for me fits into that transitional stage because we're in a controlled tube that has a ton of different variables to it, but
Correct.
it's a controlled tube. And so it we have to look at, from my philosophy, we have to look at that as its own thing because it does impact that external and then the terminal performance. But anyway, so there's a bunch of other stuff in here, guys. And if you see something, or if you come across something that you'd like for me to add, or if you come across information that you'd like to throw in there, by all means, throw anything you want into this resource because it's there for everybody, and I will never remove your access to it. Right? I mean, you will always have access to the to this folder. So, as you move down the road and you're getting yourself, positioned at, you're setting up your own business or setting up your gunsmith shop or setting up your ammunition manufacturing plant, whatever it happens to be, right? The information will be available to you then. So feel free to add. If you're going to change anything, I only ask that you copy it, make a copy of it, and save it before changing it. That way you don't change the original. Cool. All right. Modules. All right. So in this week we started obviously with, the syllabus, online classroom, resources, introduction, projectile types, discussion board. Let's take a look at the assignment. So the assignment for this one is either a video or audio file. There are only a few. You can do either or. The week six, you have to do a video presentation because in week six you have to demonstrate different results, right? And you can't do that with an audio file. So even a picture is not a video. So make sure that you are including that, right? So in this case, in step one, articulate current or superficial understanding of four types of ballistics: internal, transitional, external, terminal. Was there anything that you found interesting when conducting your research? I understand we are going to go back into that a little bit later on. And then part two, what is sectional density, and how would you, on earth would you explain that to someone who's unfamiliar with ballistics? And then part three, pick one of the following questions. I will tell you that most of the time, people either pick one ten two and six as an example. So pick something you don't know. I mean, we all have inherent knowledge, but pick something you don't know so that you actually have to do some research on it, because that will really help you grow more than picking something that you know about, right? Like, for example, how does projectile expansion affect the transition of energy? Well, if I carry defensive ammunition, I can talk to you about what a hollow point does and why that works, right? I don't need to do any research on that. That doesn't help me grow. On the other hand, what is the difference between cast and swage projectiles, and what is the process for each? That requires a little bit more thought. So I encourage you guys to push yourselves a little bit on this. Okay.
Okay.
Says should not exceed 5 minutes, including all listed criteria. Guys, I've been in your shoes. So if you hit 5 minutes, don't just end it. Go ahead and finish it out, please. You know, I would rather you get to the end and you give me your sources, because this is academic work. Always, 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 always cite your sources. Tell me where you got it from. Tell me who wrote it. Tell me when it was done, because you're going to have to be able to prove to somebody as a Smith that you actually know what you're talking about. One of my former students reached out to me saying, "Hey, I got these guys that are talking about wind drift and how this projectile is better than that projectile, and this cartridge is better than that cartridge." And to which my response was, "Well, okay, what twist rate are they using? What powder are they pushing? What's the length of the barrel? What's the atmospheric data that's connected to it?" You have to have that to be able to truly determine all of that, right? So grow your library. Anytime you do any research, save it as a PDF, stick it in a folder. That way you always have it. Make you a shop binder of all of these things so that you can come back to it later. Okay. And then here's how you're graded. Now, citing your sources. Do you have any question on the week one assignment?
No, sir. I don't, but can I make a quick statement about the quiz?
Yes.
When I did the quiz, I want to say it was the fourth or fifth question. It was a very trick question, in the way that it talked about the late policy. I knew the answer with all the other ones. I knew which ones were correct. But I selected it based off of the late work policy, because I only said it said late work policy and it was in bold. So I selected that, and then I missed half of that question basically. And I was like, dang it, I don't like missing stuff, especially if I know the answer. I was pretty pissed.
That one got me too. And I realized that it said select all that apply after I got it all wrong.
So, guys, one of the things I do try and do is that if you bring up something with me like that with the quiz, is that I will go in. I didn't write the quiz. SDI wrote the quiz. I don't have any control of that, except that I can go in and say, "No, I understand why you selected that one," and then I can make an administrative adjustment to the grade. Okay. So, if there is a question that for whatever reason everybody gets wrong, well, I need to know that as I'm going through it to then say, okay, what do I need to do to make sure that I correct whatever that deficiency of knowledge was? How do I put everything together so that you can then walk away with the knowledge you need to be successful? Right. So don't ever hesitate to let me know about issues you run into on the quizzes moving forward as well. Okay.
Okay.
Daniel, I'll take a look at that.
Awesome. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Sure. All right. So let me show you a citation resource. All right. Citationmachine.net. Will allow you to, you can actually create by class or however you want to do it, a folder that lists all of the citations you have, and then it saves it so that you can go back to the resources later if you wanted to, right? All right, so, You can see here any number of different folders that I have, right? So like here's FTT 122. So things that, I wanted to make sure I had citations for stuff that I provided to you guys, Chuck Hawks on sectional density, right? Caldwell Ballistic Precision Chronograph Kit. Those are just some examples. So if I did a search for, oh, here, we'll use this one. Let's say I used this website to plug in my information for my ballistics trajectory, right? I can then come back to, how did I dump it out? I guess I did. Oh, no, here it is. So I can come over here, I can create citation. I can click website. I can paste in my URL. And it will generate for me a properly formatted citation based on the citation type I selected, MLA 9 or whatever it happens to be. So this guy gives you guys a resource for doing that moving forward. It's, I want to say, $10 a month. So I would encourage you guys to consider that. And then it's your citation machine. So I guess that being said, I mean that's really kind of what I wanted to hit on. Is there anything you want me to come go back around to or circle back around to that I said that you might want more information on or?
Not right now. Maybe as we move farther along into the class, questions will come up. But right now, I seem to, as long as I'm able to do good research on those questions, I should be all right for this week.
Go ahead, Daniel.
I feel like you covered a good amount for the first week at least. And then if we have any other questions, you said we can actually just type into the chat. And we can see that for the next week, going forward.
Yeah, or you shoot me an email. Samuel, I know Daniel, you have my telephone number. Samuel, I record my number through the instructor guidance, but I'll give it to you now if you got something to write with.
I may have a picture. I may have taken a picture of it when I was reading your email. Is it the 817 number?
It is.
Okay.
So here's the deal, guys. I teach middle school full time. So it during the day from about 8 a.m. to about 4:30, I'm kind of a pumpkin. But if you will send me a text message, I can respond to text messages throughout the course of the day, and I will respond to your question. Now, if you send me a question and it's one of those things where it's just better that we talk, then I will reach out and I'll say, hey, here's a quick hit on the answer, but let's set up a time to get on the phone together and actually go into detail on it. And even if that's, hey, I really want you to, can you do a video session with me so we can look at different primers and talk about different powders? Of course I can. I will be happy to do that with you.
Okay. Thank you.
And I haven't made it happen yet. But by George, we are going to go to the range as a class somehow. And I'm going to show you how Ballistics Lab works and what it actually presents data-wise. I keep making contact with True Velocity Ammunition. They're a polymer ammunition manufacturer that's here in my neck of the woods. They haven't responded to me yet, so I'm about to just drive to them and knock on their door. Reason being is I want them to let me do a field trip for you guys, whether either it's live and you guys come along with me, or I go through it and I video it with, their permission, and then post it so that you guys have that, because that's pertinent to our discussion in this class. And lastly, if you would like me to try and set up the same thing with 80% lower, they do 308, AR9, 556, 223, and then all the other component parts. They moved from California to the Free Republic of Texas. So if you would like me to see if I can set up a trip with them, I'll be happy to try and set up a field trip with them as well.
Yeah, I'd be very interested in that. That's something I've been looking into a little bit. Yeah, so if you were to do something like that, like I said at the very beginning, the overall thing is to be able to kind of put stuff together. And then, like I said in my post, it'd be like a bonding stuff for families to be able to put stuff together. So, if you're able to do something like that, that'd be very helpful.
Yeah, you got it. Daniel, any final thoughts that you have, or concerns, questions, frustrations?
No, I'm perfectly fine. I mean, I'm okay with any of that stuff, especially if it's coming to Texas, because I'm from Texas. I live in Arizona now, and any chance I get to go back to Texas, I love it. So if you plan something like that and it's the beginning of the year, I could definitely make it happen. So
Where's your where do you call home in the great state?
I was born and raised in El Paso, Texas, which a lot of the East Texas guys don't consider El Paso part of Texas, but it is.
Well,
But that's where I'm from.
you know the saying, the sun has risen, the sun has set, and here I sit in Texas yet.
Yep. If it wasn't for the humidity, I would have moved east and stayed in Texas. But Arizona is where I call home now, and I moved to the heat. So.
I'll let you know what I can set up, Daniel. And if it's something that it works timeline wise for you to bounce this way and come through, that'd be awesome. I know, Samuel, your schedule is probably not as flexible.
Oh.
But if nothing else, we'll get it on video. All right. All right, guys. Well, thanks for joining. I hope that, we have more people in the future. And like I said, once this is processed, I'll post it. And I look forward to seeing you guys in the classroom during the rest of the week.
Right. You have a great night.
All right, you too.
Awesome.
Take
Thank
care.
you.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye-bye.